car, and I'll be going. You know I hate to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. I hate to leave you, I really must say. Oh, good night, sweetheart. Good night.
Energy Hog to team. Infiltrate the house and waste some energy.
No problem. It's got leaky windows.
And no attic insulation.
Perfect. Now go wild and waste some wattage.
The Mitchell House, a house like many others, except this one's under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy's being wasted.
Talk to me, hogs.
Washer, it's not Energy Star rating.
Outstanding. What about the thermostat?
Not programmable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of energy hogs. You.
Hold on. Someone's home.
And he's got energy-efficient light bulbs.
To find out how you can fight energy hogs, log on to energyhog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star. That's it. Get out of there. I'll get you, energyhog.org.
Hey, wait for me.
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Coming up next, for the next hour, our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is our local news and views show. That's where we feature the local news that you don't get on any other radio or TV station here in Detroit. Truly local for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Usually heavily based on information from our two wonderful weekly newspapers, the Dearborn Times-Herald and the Dearborn Press and Guide, as well as other sources that cover issues that touch on all of us. Beginning the show today, and my name is, I should always forget, such total humility, I forget to mention my own name. My name is Jay Koronick, and I'm happy to be with you today. Also in the studio, and it's mic check time, folks, is Susan Garrett, who is returning as our WHFR News Director. And how are you today, Susan?
I'm just fine. Nice to be here with you on this beautiful day in Michigan. The temperature is about 70 degrees, no clouds, beautiful sunshine, beautiful fall day, the leaves are turning, and, you know, it's a good thing.
Thanks for that weather report. I remember in Michigan, it could be different in 15 minutes, so
we'll
check back with you. You keep looking out the window there.
Thank you.
Also in the studio with us is a special guest, and it is Marty Sheedy. Marty, welcome to WHFR, and you're here to talk about the Pathway to Possibilities. It's a disability awareness event coming up next Thursday, October 16th. So, first of all, again, you're part of the Dearborn Commission on Disabilities, which I think is the title for it. And tell us just briefly about that group and your relation to it.
Thank you very much for having me today. The Dearborn Commission on Disability Concerns is a group of people that helps the city as an advisory board to assist them with citizen concerns that might pop up. We work on different projects that the citizens deem necessary, or also the city council might help with different projects.
So sometimes you get involved by people maybe calling directly to City Hall, and the commission gets messages that way by people that call in. Other times, I assume the city council or the mayor's office will ask the commission to meet. How many people are on this Dearborn Commission on Disabilities?
There are 7 of us.
7, okay. That's a good working group. You don't need too many, or things go on forever. And one of the big things, of course, that you do that's very visible to the whole community is Pathways to Possibilities. This is the 4th year, is it?
Yes.
I don't want to put you. I know you're new to
the group. I believe, though, that this is my first year actually running on this. But I think it's 6 years now.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that right away. I already mentioned it's going to be next Thursday, October 16th, and it's, as you mentioned, from about 9:30 in the morning, getting started there with presentations, I see, starting at 10 to about 3:30 in the afternoon. At least the vendor fair goes until then, I see. Yeah. And it's going to be held at?
At the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center on Mitzen Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In Dearborn, Michigan. And also, we are going to have different lunch stops. We're going to have Teen Empowerment, Casting a Vision by Susan Youngs. She is the medical director for the program for exceptional families. We're going to have a disability fashion show, and it's called Fashion Moves: Fun and Function with Your Wardrobe. There will be an independent voting workshop created, brought to you from the Greater Detroit Agency for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and that will help with this new technology that's been created for voting machines.
Mm-hmm. And there's still time enough for people who have, maybe as you said, the problem of the difficult situation, certainly at the outset anyway, of blindness and vision impairment, to get them ready to vote in November, too. I assume they have to be registered already, like everybody else, but if they're unsure about how to proceed with voting, then this, as you said, workshop, this presentation, it can give them some immediate information. And, of course, a vendor fair, and what that means is that there's companies that, some nonprofits, some for-profits, no doubt, that are going to be having their booth, their table set up, I assume, pretty much the whole day, 9:30 to 3:30, and whatever services or information that they provide, you can just, if you attend this, you can just go and take a look and see what services are there. How many so-called vendors, again, vendor, I always think of a hot dog vendor, but it's these service groups, some for-profit, not always counting them now. Okay. Don't want to disturb the counting, but I think it looks like about 24 almost.
Yeah, we have about 30.
30, okay, great.
A little more, over 30. And but still actually didn't a few in some attempts.
Some more still might show up, sure.
Yeah,
right, at the last minute.
Mm-hmm. Some of the major vendors that will be there, or just some, are the Athletes of Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Disabilities, the Athletes of Hall of Fame. Of course, Henry Ford Community College will be there.
Mm-hmm.
U of M Dearborn. The Marsden Shriners, talking about the child care program.
Okay, at the Shriners, yes.
And also, there's going to be a lot of information there that it will be vital for people with or without disabilities.
Yeah, really, everyone could benefit by these presentations. That's the bottom line there. So if you have any time at all, folks. Now, I always think that in terms of some of the business people in the community, they want to provide as much opportunities for as many good workers as possible, including people with disabilities. And so some of these presentations would be especially helpful, I think, to a small or medium-sized business person that maybe not have any other outside advice, coming to them from a corporate office or whatever about what to do and how to look for it. Because good employees are hard to find. Just an aside here, because we mentioned the blind, and to be perfectly politically correct, I have to say that there's a movie in the theaters right now called Blindness. Now, it's a science fiction movie. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's actually being protested by a couple of national groups for the blind, because they say it gives the impression that people who are blind are incapable of taking care of themselves. Now, of course, what happens in the movie, as a movie person, what happens in the movie is there's some sort of either disease or government experiment gone wrong that causes a large percent of the population to lose their eyesight. And, of course, they're rather helpless right away. I mean, if you lose your eyesight right away, you're helpless. But the blind, of course, and people who were born without sight or very little limited sight, you can get good at all those things. You can be a completely 100% useful member of society and have a great life. Sometimes it takes assistance and help. Just briefly, Marty, we're talking to Marty Sheedy here from, you're not related to Ally Sheedy, are you?
No. Oh, darn. People ask me that.
One of my favorite actresses, yeah. Okay. She hasn't done too much recently. But anyway, okay. Marty, you in fact, of course, you're a volunteer on the commission in Dearborn, and that's a wonderful thing to be volunteers, such as Susan Garrett and the rest of our staff here helping WHFR. You said you're either setting up or you've already set up a nonprofit group yourself, and maybe just take a minute to tell us about that organization.
Yes, I have a condition called arthrodryposis, which is a condition of the joints and the muscles, and I had learned to develop a walk called Synodate. And which means my legs are twice over, and that helps benefit me to walk because my hips are dislocated.
Okay.
So what I'm trying to do with my nonprofit is to provide motivational speech and to educate medical professionals that might not be aware of the style of walking that it might help somebody else.
Right. You'd like to spread the word, and would you and your group, you just provide the information, the connections, you don't do any training yourself?
No, not at the moment.
Okay. Well, that's, you were using a wheeled sort of walker coming in here, and then you walked from the other studio here, no problem. So you're a living example of your own success at getting over that particular problem that other people take for granted. And of course, many people with disabilities, as you well know, have superior abilities in many other ways that so-called people without a certain physical or psychological or mental issue might not have, you know. So everybody has to be judged on the full range of their abilities. Yes. I think you'd agree to that. And do you have a name for your organization?
It's called the Project Citizen Date Foundation.
The Project
Citizen Date.
Citizen Date?
Citizen, like scissors.
Scissors. Okay, yeah. Project Scissors.
G-A-I-T.
Scissorgate. Okay, like Watergate. Okay, yeah. Project Scissorgate. Okay, well, and you'll be there at the presentation, and people can talk to you maybe? Or do you have a vendor table, or you're just around?
I'll just be around helping out. Okay. I'll be the MC for the day.
Oh, and that's great.
Also, our keynote speaker will be Peter Leedy, and going back to the whole business people, he'll be doing a presentation called Building Community Relationships. Uh-huh. And that's vitally important.
And the keynote speaker, what time is that?
From 12 p.m. to 1 p.m.
Okay. That's usually sort of the central, presentation of the day, but it's usually a nationally known figure. Let me just grab this and give that quick rundown of Peter's background. He's been learning from people with developmental disabilities since 1983. He worked for Options and Community Living, a supported living agency in Madison, Wisconsin, until 2004. And he's been helping people to... Oh, get this too, folks. Peter Leedy, Leedy, right?
Yes.
Okay. He writes songs and sings humorous and thought-provoking songs about life in the human service system. And has recorded 3 CDs of the songs. Wow. Yeah, I bet they're thought-provoking. The human service system can certainly be improved for all of us. So I bet some of them have to be humorous, or we might start crying. Oh, well. He often speaks and sings at conferences throughout the world, throughout the United States, as well as Canada and England. And do you think he's going to sing this coming?
Yes, we do know he's going to bring his guitar. So I don't know what he's going to sing.
Musical entertainment as well as thought-provoking ideas, too.
Yeah, so that would be really, really cool.
Yeah, apparently he had a show, on, it says here, on Wisconsin Public Television, their news program Here and Now, and he is from Madison, Wisconsin. So that's called Building Community Relationship with Peter Leedy, and that'll be at 12 noon to 1 o'clock in the theater at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, of course. And by the way, a lot of great sponsors in the community who are almost too many to be named that are helping support this one-day expo and conference. I see Ford Parenting Network, Bush's Fresh Food and Ideas. Do they have a restaurant locally? It's spelled like the beer, Bush. But I think it is. I don't drink the beer. Anyway, Wright and Philippus, I know of them. I used to get prescriptions from them. Ford Employees Dealing with Disabilities, Ford Mobility Motoring, Oakwood Hospital, Shields. I've eaten there. Shields and Dearborn. Okay, their pizza. Yeah, okay. Sorry, I had your mic off. Susan Garrett says she loves Shields. Okay. And DRIS, Detroit Metro Radio's Reading and Information Service for Blind and Print-Impaired Citizens. And don't want to forget the Dearborn Rotary. So that's just the folks on the back of the brochure who took out the big logo ads, and there's probably many more that are helping in a variety of ways. So.
Yeah, and without them, that really makes our event each year as our sponsors. So we definitely want to thank all of them.
Well, we will keep on mentioning all these activities on WHFR, of course, this week. And Marty, we want to thank you for coming by, and you know, anyone going to this event again next Thursday, 9:30 in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon at the Dearborn community. I can't say Dearborn, it's Dearborn's Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, because Ford gave $10 million, so they got to have their name right in there. But it's here in Dearborn. It's on Michigan Avenue, just immediately west of Greenfield. And people do not have to come for the whole day or sign up in the morning, right?
No, it just come whenever people are available.
And if we didn't mention, it's free, folks.
Yep.
And there's coffee, free coffee and pastries served, at least probably in the morning until they run out. And, of course, that facility has the Panera Bread place probably open all day, too. So if you need extra sustenance to get you through the day, as many of us do, that will be right there in that same facility. But as I said, thank you. Nice meeting you, Marty.
And thank you very much.
Good luck on
me.
Pathway to Possibilities. We'll keep announcing it here on WHFR.FM. So we're going to take another little public service break, folks, and be right back with more of the new WHFR Journal.
Space is non-stop. However, within the space of 2 hours every Friday evening from 6 until 8 p.m., space is the place to be at 89.3 WHFR.FM, where you'll hear pioneering modulations to today's experimentations and everything in between. That's Space is the Place, Fridays from 6 until 8 p.m., only on the station making waves, 89.3 WHFR.FM.
And we're back on the new WHFR Journal. Yeah, Space is the Place coming up later today on WHFR.FM. Susan Morrell, yes, is here with us now. So, Susan, again, I said before that how much we were happy to have you back. And of course, your comments and so on. We haven't gotten, I don't know, can you in maybe 30 seconds, maybe we'll give you a whole minute, tell us. I mean, people who've been listening to the show regularly, they know what I think about the financial crisis we're in, the bailout. Do you have any insights or suggestions? We're trying to stay positive here and not do the gloom and doom thing like maybe Glenn Beck does every night. Let me get your microphone on. Go.
Well, to stay positive is very difficult in this climate. I was totally against the bailout for a number of reasons, because it wasn't well examined to begin with. We didn't have enough input from economists and people who really know what these kinds of things will do to the economy. But now that it has passed, I was really surprised that both presidential candidates supported it. I wasn't in favor of that either, but it doesn't seem to have, they say they revised it, it has more controls, but I don't think it has enough controls. The economy is still tanking. The stock market has basically crashed. I'm not an economist. I don't presume to know what the answer is, but it seems to me that the whole problem has been caused by lack of jobs in the country, jobs being exported out of the country, NAFTA for all these years, overextension of credit to homeowners, inflating the prices of real estate to an exorbitant level where people don't have the income to afford it. And the people in the banking industry, I don't feel all that sorry for them, since they constructed a lot of these loans. They knew that people wouldn't be able to afford them. But obviously, we need some real brainy people in charge of this money in order to now resolve these difficulties. But I think it's going to be a long time coming.
So you personally, what have you done anything differently? Have you, and I'm just using the exaggeration of some of the things we hear from television, taken all your money out of investments and put the cash under your bed or something?
Well, people have been forecasting this for quite some time. So I took all my money out of the stock market.
Oh, you did?
Quite some time ago, before this happened. Mm-hmm. At least 6 months, maybe a year ago, I did that. And so my money is in the bank. I didn't run to the bank and take money out of the bank yet, but there are a lot of doom and gloom forecasts out here, and things are getting pretty shaky. Everybody's getting pretty nervous.
Mm-hmm. Jim Cramer, who does a show called Mad Money on MSNBC, he's a wild guy. Gets very, very excited on his show, which is on 5 nights a week. I'm not sure if they repeat something on weekends. When his show started a couple of years back, it was all, hey, where are the hot investments, to take risks and make a ton of money. And he was very, very sharp on that, although I remember he did go bankrupt a couple times along the way. But then now that he's recommending stocks, or was recommending stocks anyway, and investments on his show, he had to put his money into a charitable trust so that he really wasn't too directly involved with and whenever he mentions a company on his show, either good or bad, they put on the bottom of the screen that he owns some of that stock, so that you can judge whether or not he's being biased or whatever. But when this first started about 2 weeks ago, before the $700 billion
with
bailout,
a B, that's a large B,
with the extra $150 billion of goodies, little tax incentives and so on tossed in there, including the $25 billion, seems small by comparison, of assistance to the Detroit auto companies to go and do research and development on energy efficient vehicles. Duh, as if they shouldn't have been doing that for
these
other years. But when you talk about $25 billion to the U.S. three main U.S. automakers, that seems like chump change compared to the $700 billion
right,
and other giveaways. But Cramer started all this, I think, panic, at least if people watch his show regularly. He said 2 weeks ago, get your money out of the stock market.
Exactly.
Of course, now, well, I don't think there's too much left, and so you want to sell your stocks at a massive loss now wouldn't be a wise idea, because I think you just have to hope that those companies that you have stock in are not going to go belly up, and that if you hang on to them later, the price is going to go back up. It might be 3 to 5 years or more, but if the company still exists. But right now, it seems that's not the right advice right now, because everyone, even suggesting on the radio this morning that GM might go bankrupt. GM, General Motors.
Well, we've heard that prediction about GM for many years, and it wouldn't surprise me if they did.
They said they're not going to go bankrupt, but they might consider being bought out by somebody. You've got a couple billion dollars in your pocket, you know.
Maybe Toyota will buy them.
yeah, there you go. Talk about getting a foot into the U.S. economy. Well, we don't want to support the gloom and doom and the panic mode here, but people that do have investments in the market a couple of weeks ago probably should have got out, but it's almost even a week ago, I think it's problematic whether or not you should liquidate. And there's nothing to fear about money in the banks because that is government insured. In fact, if you have money in most banks, you're not getting hardly any interest anyway.
I'm not making any interest.
Right. You just put it there for the security's sake. Well, that's secure, folks. And if you went over $100,000 in your account, you might have been concerned. But now they have approved, and I think they're signing into law today, the $250,000 limit on each account. And so in the past, anybody that knew about the $100,000 limit, they would, if they're that rich, they would get two accounts or three accounts, whatever they need to keep the insurance. So don't take your money out of the banks, folks. That's not going to help anything. Okay, you'll get no interest if it's, somebody said that there's a massive increase in the number of personal safes that you buy to have in your home.
That's an idea.
To hide your money in the safe. Because under the bed is a sort of a...
If you do that, I recommend getting a vicious dog and a gun in addition to that, if you do that.
Yeah, that's real problematic. If people know you have a lot of money in your house or even a couple thousand in that, it does... You can't tell people about that. You better hide the safe, not have it in your living room on display for your friends and get, look, all my money is right there. Oh, my God.
Yeah, my gun is there, too. So.
Yeah, well, that's...
No, but I don't know if you've heard of Peter Schiff, and he's a doom and gloomer, but he runs an investment company that invests all the money out of the country, and he says invest everything, you know, out of the country. So I really was thinking about opening an account with him.
Hopefully it wasn't an account in Iceland, because if you heard on the news this morning, Iceland is the first country in the world due to this crisis that is bankrupt.
Yeah, what's going on in Iceland?
Well,
they had
most, their ties were to Europe, and most of their federal government money, again, they're a small country, but they invested and saved most of their money in British banks, in banks in England, which have gone belly up, you know, and England, so that Iceland couldn't get any of their money out because they wanted to take it all out right away or something. They froze the money, and they said they used their own, something like their Homeland Security Act, to say that if Iceland takes all their money out, it would make further British banks go broke. And so they said we're freezing all your accounts, you know, which is... That's a double pun there because Iceland is very cold. Freezing your accounts so that you can't take the money out, but now they can't have access to their money, so that's why they're bankrupt. It's like they don't have any money because the British used a terrorist act to forbid them from taking their money out because it would hurt England if the Iceland had access to their money.
Well, when can they take their money out?
Maybe never at night. So they're hoping that the World Monetary Fund or somebody else will bail them out. And Warren Buffett, you want to buy a country?
Come on, Warren, help them out.
Iceland has some beautiful glaciers while they last and a couple of, I think, active volcanoes. So,
but they are melting.
And let's see, Bork, the female avant singer, lives there still, I guess. So you get some free concerts by Bork if you buy Iceland. So it's not a time to buy, though. And in terms of home sales, I've been thinking, just to get the personal side to our listeners, I've been thinking since I'm retired from my full-time job here at the college now, although still with WHFR, to going to, as many people do, warmer climate, especially in winter, and trying to buy in some other place in the country. But my house is dropped in value about 25%. Which I guess is not as bad as a fellow on Detroit Today with WDET's show this morning called in with his comment. His house has dropped 35% in value. It all depends what you think the value should be. You know, what are market values at any one point in time? But not a lot of people can afford that. Now, luckily, I have my house almost totally paid off. So that's called equity. And so whatever I sell it for is like almost clear profit of almost all of that amount. But still, prices are still not dropping enough in some of these communities that I've been looking at. In other words, prices are falling faster in Michigan than they are in a couple of other places that I've been looking at. So still can't afford to move anywhere because of that. I don't, you know, a lot of people say, well, I don't want to take a loss. Well, it's not a loss if all home prices are going to be lower, you know, than the next one you buy is low. But the places I'm looking, unfortunately, it's, you know, there. I think Smart Money Magazine, current issue, and you can go to smartmoney.com, folks, for these things. I'm not recommending them over Money Magazine or whatever, but they have an article about the communities where prices are holding steady or going up still, even in this crisis.
Oh, really?
Like Austin, Texas, which is where I'm going to visit next week, although I can't afford to buy anything.
It's too hot for you down there, Jay.
Well, 2 months a year, need the air conditioner on day and night, full blast, probably. But and they're running out of water and things like that. But it's the community values, the value of the properties is still quite high. So that makes it even more impossible for those of us that have a home, even if it's almost paid off or all paid off, to go to a place like that. I don't know how Miami, Florida is doing or other places in that vicinity where I was also looking at the prices in Tucson, Arizona, which is close to the Mexican border, southern part of Arizona, also very warm there. But their prices have dropped quite a bit in that place. So there's only like 8 or 10 metropolitan areas in the U.S. that their prices are holding steady. And that's bad news for those of us that might have wanted to relocate there. You were thinking and hoping to go to Florida to relocate yourself. I know you had a number of personal and family issues that came up that encouraged you to stay. But you were going to be, without going into details, but you were going to be, you weren't going to be buying in Florida. Initially, you were going to be renting or
yes,
staying with a friend and
yes,
whatever. So that would be a way out, of course, temporarily if people had to relocate. But job markets, I don't think.
But it's very warm down there too, James.
Yes, it is.
Forget.
It's humid.
And it's
you
very
think
humid.
Michigan is humid. You go to some place in Florida and Austin is not quite that bad. It's not right on the water. Houston is very, very humid in Texas.
Yeah.
You think you were swimming even though you're on dry land in Houston. It's just ugly, and the mosquitoes are Texas-sized down
and
there.
And also, I hear that the bugs are very, very large also in Florida. So, you know, there's pros and cons for every single location. But the bigger problem is that we're still in the midst of this financial crisis, mm-hmm, and it's just not getting any better. And they say,
worse.
It's a worldwide, going to a worldwide depression.
That's why I mentioned Iceland. That one of the things that happens, of course, is that people generally. I thought I brought this in with me here. I can't find my notes here. Here it's somewhere. I'm off the mic. Mike, where are you? There's Mike. Hi, Mike. Microphone. I made a list of financial survival tips, so I'm going to give you one, Susan.
Oh, okay. But, thank you.
But basically, and it's crazy to read it on the air because it's just stuff that people told me when I was in high school or my parents who went through the Great Depression. Is this Great Depression number two? I added some things to it. But basically, they believed in not buying on credit. There were credit cards. There were loans they could get. They believed in saving up. And therefore, they avoid the interest, of course, and the debt, the responsibility in a time of crisis. You don't want to have bills that have to be paid.
Well,
you know,
I'm out of debt, which is a good thing.
Me too, and I'm sorry for everybody it isn't, but in anticipating retirement, I knew I would have to do it, and I had a plan for the last 5 years, and I circled the date. I think it was February or March of this year when I officially paid off the last revolving credit payment, and now I'm in a massive mode to save up money so that I can, number one, pay off the remaining amount of my house, which is small, but I'm going to get that paid off quick so I don't have a house payment anymore. Imagine. You still have the taxes, of course, and upkeep, and my car. So I'm also saving. Imagine having money that you can save with, folks. I know it's tough for all of us, but in order to do that, you have to cut back on what they call discretionary spending.
This is true.
So whatever, and it's different for everyone, whatever that extra amount might be. For a lot of people in this area, probably, having a car, and a really nice car, or a fancy car, or a sports car, or a convertible, or whatever, the extra cost of all these things, or a bigger car, you got to start considering making another choice there. Probably can't afford to buy a new car, though, too, in this situation. But those big debt payments from a car payment are the second biggest weight around your neck in terms of the financial crisis.
And you know that more and more vehicles now are being repossessed. They used to come and repossess them around 30 days if you were 30 days late. Now they're allowing people to keep the vehicle for 90 days if they're 90 days late on payments. Why? Because the banks don't want the cars. If they take them back to an auction, they're going to sell them at a loss.
Oh, great loss now. Yeah, right.
You know, nobody's buying cars.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and so my list, you know, don't buy on credit. I mean, I know that's crazy if you don't have any enough money, but you have to figure out how to cut back. And
don't go shopping. Don't go on shopping sprees.
Yeah. For a lot of people, shopping has become entertainment. I mean, it's a way to relax. If you go to a shopping center and you come home with nothing, I mean, people always, or I heard some people say, you went shopping. What did you buy?
Right.
And if you didn't buy, I didn't buy anything. I just looked. What? Well, Anti-American or something?
I mean, we have to buy necessities.
Yes.
That is true.
Sure.
But I don't even want to go into a mall. I don't even want to go window shopping.
Right.
You know, because I'm not in the buying mode right now.
Well, I suggested last year to my daughter and her husband, who were, I think they were subscribing to cable TV, and they were getting all the pay movie channels.
Oh.
And they were able to afford it, but it was like $150, $160 a month. It's like all the Showtime, HBO, everything. Every channel you could get that cost extra money per month. And most people with cable pay at least $40 or $50 a month, which, you know, the United States charges more for cable services than any other country in the world. But anyway, and it's an important information source for a lot of people. Many more channels and the specialized news channels and so on, I think, can be helpful to people. But I just suggested a DVD rental by mail company. There's several. Netflix, Blockbuster, and I'm sure there's others. And so they were able to back off on almost $100 a month. So they're saving almost $100 a month. And they're only paying, I think it's $15 a month to rent a couple movies a week. They just watch them, send them back, and they get a much wider range than what would be on the cable movie channels. Even with all the channels, they always repeat, you know, and it's just the most popular movies. And so they got a wide range of about 80,000 movies now to pick from, including the latest movies that come out. And so it's saving about $100. So everybody's got to sit down and do the outline of what their expenses are and then see where they can save money. And every time before you spend, you think about it. Do I really need this?
Well,
or do I merely want it? Now, every now and then it's nice to buy, I'll just use a metaphor, a candy bar or something.
Well, candy bars.
That may not be healthy, but I'm saying
it's a little treat
is what I'm saying. You don't have to do the big treat. Oh, we'll go out and buy a whole new wardrobe. Or, you know, just buy the essential stuff and make a good choice and have a lot of fun with it. And, I know everybody needs a little special treat every now and then because we all deserve it if we're working hard, certainly, and it helps relieve the stress. But it's better not to go crazy here and just back off a little. I know that cutting down on shopping hurts the economy in the long run. But what else are you going to do when you don't have enough money up front for a mortgage or your other payments? So.
Well, my biggest concern about the $700 billion bailout, and this is what people who are very knowledgeable say, is that it's going to cause inflation. And so it hasn't started yet, but if that starts, that will not be good. That will not be a good fuel to the fire.
Okay. Well, here on the new WHFR Journal, this is WHFR.FM, we're at Station Making Waves. Susan Morell and myself are here with you today, and my name is Jay Koronick. What I wanted to do in our remaining 23 minutes is to at least get in information about two presidential candidates that you may have never heard of or certainly don't know anything about. And I thought the best way to talk about the Constitution Party candidate is, and his name is Chuck Baldwin, is to have Susan here read an article from him. Can you read it quickly or summarize?
Well, I'll just summarize.
Yes, go ahead.
His main points, because this is from the American Free Press from October 13th. And it says, Ron Paul endorses the Constitution Party candidate. And his name is Chuck Baldwin, and I'm just going to go over some of the main points of what he supports and what he wants to do.
Okay, and I just, as I mentioned to my listeners, you know, well, and certainly a lot of people know here in Michigan, in fact, one of our students in our staff training class just last week said that he was going to vote for Chuck Baldwin. And I said, how did you find out about that? He said, well, I was a Ron Paul supporter. You know, Ron Paul, a congressman from Texas, is a Republican, but he ran for the Republican presidential nomination. Didn't get it, of course, but he's done pretty well in several states. But he formerly ran, remember, folks, as a presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. I think it was 92, 94, whatever the year was back then. And so he's kind of a Republican, but he's more a Libertarian. But it's interesting that he's not supporting the Libertarian presidential candidates, presidential vice presidential candidates, which is Bob Barr, who really was a dyed-in-the-wool Republican up until 2 years ago, and Wayne Allen Root, his vice presidential candidate. But Ron Paul has endorsed now, specifically, Chuck Baldwin. So what do we know about Chuck Baldwin, according to Chuck Baldwin? She's looking at this weekly paper, by the way, folks, and I think I might have mentioned it before to you, the American Free Press. They do have a website. They try to do alternative news. Now, wide range of some opinions that you might find crazy or conspiratorial, but it's interesting to read and find out the facts. Again, if you're reading an article, a lot of words, more than a soundbite here on this show, you can find out a lot more information, and you decide, of course, you decide whether or not there's legitimacy. But this is a real article that Susan is going to summarize for us now from Chuck Baldwin, the Constitution Party candidate who has now received Ron Paul's endorsement.
And this article is actually written by Chuck Baldwin. Mm-hmm. He says he's going to end the police state, and he's going to dismantle the Patriot Act. He's going to restore law enforcement to the states and local governments, where it rightly belongs. Mm-hmm. He's going to end the war on drugs and the so-called war on terror. No more warrantless searches and seizures. No more eavesdropping on Americans' phone calls or collecting Americans' emails. No more spying on American citizens without court order and oversight. No more stripping Americans of their constitutional rights in the name of national security, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And his other point is he's going to kill the New World Order, and he's going to dismantle NAFTA. The NAFTA superhighway is dead. The North American Union is dead. I will work to eliminate NAFTA, CAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, the FTAA, and the FTAA is DOA. I will not expend tax dollars for the support of the United Nations. He's going to make sweeping changes. He wants the end of the illegal alien invasion, and it's the federal government's responsibility to repel invasions, and the illegal immigration crisis is more than immigration. It is an invasion. I will stop it. Even if I have to send the U.S. Army to the borders, we will put a stop to this invasion of illegal aliens. He is going to aggressively prosecute those employers who knowingly hire illegals. His first day in office will be the last day in prison for border agents Ramos and Campion. He will personally open the prison doors and restore these men to their freedom. He will give them their jobs back with pay if they want it.
Yeah, this issue, of course, has been covered extensively on the Lou Dobbs show.
Yes.
on cable news channel, whatever which one he's on, and Glenn Beck too. I mean, both
yes.
of them are totally, totally in support of this position that these two border guards were, if not falsely accused, at least unjustly accused and sent to jail, and that wrong needs to be righted, according to these national commentators. So Chuck Baldwin is not just picking a little picayune thing. He's got a lot of attention for these border guards here and the injustice that's supposedly happened to them.
He wants to stop interventionism. The interventionism by the United States, a nation-building empire. He wants to bring our troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan. He wants to end foreign aid. He will get the United States out of NATO, and he will start taking care of the United States. The Bush doctrine of preemptive war is over when I become president. I would never send troops to invade and occupy a country without a declaration of war by Congress. He's also in favor of religious liberty. He is a born-again Christian, as is Ron Paul, and he wants to protect the religious liberty of every American seriously. He shares Ron Paul's commitment to the sanctity of life, and he wants Congress to pass Dr. Paul's Sanctity of Life Act, which would overturn Roe v. Wade and end abortion on demand. He will eliminate the Internal Revenue Service and disband the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
He will seek to eliminate the Departments of Education, Commerce, and Energy. I will demand that Congress pass a balanced budget and that we stop deficit spending. So that's it in a nutshell.
Okay, pretty big nut there. I mean, not Mr. Baldwin. No. It's just interesting. You think, well, who is the Constitution Party? It's not many people, and they must have some very rich people that helped them stay on the ballots in most every state. The Constitution Party has been on the Michigan ballot with their presidential candidate as long as I can remember. They don't have, I guess, money enough for a lot of TV ads and other ways to get the message out there. So they really only come into existence once every 4 years. For the presidential race. And it's interesting to me, the only one or two things I think where they differ with the Libertarian Party is Libertarians would allow, they would not be against abortion. They would make that a personal choice. But a lot of the other points sound exactly like the Libertarian Party platform. It's just unfortunate, I think, that Bob Barr and his record as a somewhat Bushite Republican until 2 years ago, and he said, "Oh, I've seen the light. I've been totally wrong." Whoa, you know,
that's a big change.
Yeah, and he makes some good speeches, but then he snubbed Ron Paul on the September 10th press conference, where Ron Paul invited all the third party candidates, which means Constitution Party, Libertarian, Green Party, and Ralph Nader as an independent candidate, and anyone else who wanted to come, to say to the American public that, you know, not the two big parties. Vote for anybody you want to, but not the two big parties, because there's some real part. They're both part of the problem. All this mudslinging. Did the Dems do it? They were the two parties in control, back and forth, president, Congress, whatever. That, but they were the two parties that were sleeping at the switch here. While now the markets are crashing even more, and nobody really knows how to do the bailout right. An article or a story that I heard on National Public Radio yesterday is that there's some banking association worldwide, not the UN, that ranked countries and their banking systems for stability, security, fairness, and strictness of regulations. Just to keep the system going, not nationalized banks and so on. But the U.S.'s system, even before this crisis, was 19th in the world. 19th least stable, least secure, least well-regulated, and the number one country that had the best regulatory system without owning all the banks and everything, and just appropriate guidelines in place that were, responsibly, objectively applied, Canada. Right next door, folks. Right next door. And it's true, their economy, just like the whole world's economy, if we go into this dive. There's a lot of businesses and investments that go down in other countries like Iceland, too. And Canada is knows that they've got some tough times ahead, but they have the best designed federal government regulatory system, according to this, you know, objective survey by banks before the crisis happened. England is slightly below us, which I think they're 20th or whatever worst regulated, which means, you know, buying up banks, which England started doing earlier this week to prevent a further crisis. We just kicked into this idea yesterday. The president, oh, let's buy a it's not a bad idea. Well, I've seen it poo-pooed in the press one way or another, but anything England does is not necessarily the best idea, folks. Canada has got a lot of good ideas, and we should look at those and then take the best parts of their ideas. Oh, my goodness. So anyone who can listen to this show, and I'm sure many people can over in Windsor, just across the border or across the river from Detroit here, we always say good things about you. And
that's another criticism of this bailout, this huge bailout. Do we want Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke and the people who are in charge of this bailout and constructed it and devised it and created it, do we want them in charge when they let us down the primrose path here?
Well, supposedly they have a lot of knowledge. Yeah, well,
but where has their knowledge gotten us so
right,
far?
I know. I recommended and read from last couple of weeks the books, Mike's Election Guide. Michael Moore has written a new book for this fall in paperback, inexpensive, called Mike's Election Guide 2008. Now, a lot has happened in the last couple of weeks, so if you want to know what Michael Moore thinks about how to fix the Wall Street mess and what our country should do, he's updated his recommendations. And folks, I have to tell you, you may think of him as some sort of clown documentary filmmaker, goes for the easy jokes or something. Read his books, okay? Great research, great ideas, fresh ideas. MichaelMoore.com. Now, he is supporting Senator Obama and the Democrats. And, well, you know, but take a look at his ideas. I've got here something from the 7th, a couple of days back, 3 days back, about his suggestions, which come from, it's not just off the top of his head, a guy that used to live in Flint, Michigan. You know, he's got great ideas here. The rich must pay for their own bailout, appoint a special prosecutor to criminally indict anyone on Wall Street who contributed knowingly to the collapse, bail out the people losing their homes, not the people who will build an eighth home. Again, another idea, if your bank or company gets any of our money in a bailout, then we own you. That's a suggestion that just popped up about ownership of these companies. Which
that sounds good.
Yeah, David Brooks, although he's a conservative, he thinks that that makes more sense than just a bailout.
Oh, I agree.
Just buying bad assets. You buy the company and show them who's boss if they don't want to do
exactly.
things.
Exactly.
But it's not necessarily the best idea. They say if a bank, that we're not buying a percentage in every bank, just the banks that are in trouble. So the shareholders at those banks, the stock's going to go down as soon as the government comes in to buy their percentage, because it means the government already identified your bank as in trouble. So the stock's going to go even further down if the government buys a share of the bank, although maybe it'll come up later. Regulation should be restored, says Michael Moore. If it's too big to fail, then it's too big to exist. So I guess he wants to break up the big banks and the big banking companies.
Oh, that's an idea.
Yeah, that's going to take time. Strengthen the FDIC, as they're already doing. He does say everybody needs to take a deep breath, calm down, and not let fear rule the day, including some of these banks. But he's in favor, said, create a national bank outright. Call it a people's bank. In other words, why not? The government sets up a bank for people, and they run it very carefully. And, give a little competition.
Sure.
Don't eliminate the other private banks. Let's see if they can compete with the government. Ha ha. Still, if you're in Iceland and your government and your whole country goes bankrupt, then what happens to your people's bank in Iceland?
Well, I'm really worried about the people in Iceland if they can't get any money out of the bank. That's very concerning.
Okay.
But, Jay, can I ask you about Chuck
quick.
Baldwin?
Yes.
Do you know any background information about him?
Nothing.
Oh.
So, okay. But folks, you can go to the Constitutional Party's website, which I'm sure, or just Google it or something, you know, type in Constitutional Party. And
I mean, he seems to be a very intelligent person.
Or Chuck Baldwin, and see what you think. You know, we're just trying to give you ideas here. We're not saying you should vote for them. We're not saying you should not vote for Obama or McCain. But we're saying look at all your choices. The big commercial news media, including the New York Times, that I do read every day because they have other good information there, they don't cover the third parties at all, and they're on the ballot. What is that fair? Is that balanced? No, it isn't. Even the big networks don't give Ralph Nader much time. He's on C-SPAN sometimes, but they don't hardly give him any time at all to talk about. I wanted to, today, though, I have to, if we did Chuck Baldwin, I wanted to talk about Cynthia McKinney and the Green Party, because they're on the ballot here in Michigan, too. In July, the Green Party nominated former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney and hip-hop activist Rosa Clemente. So I'm not part of the hip-hop generation, but she is known somehow to be involved as a hip-hop activist, okay? And she's the Green Party's presidential vice presidential candidate. So it says here, the Green Party, I'm reading from the Green Party newsletter, and you can find out more at gp.org. And their Green Pages, which is just on the website. It's their newsletter, okay? They've taken the lead by filing, let's see, where were comment from Cynthia McKinney. Anyway, Cynthia McKinney, here we go. Cynthia McKinney's candidacy marked the 160th anniversary of the Equal Rights Party nomination of the first female American presidential candidate, Victoria Woodhull. So there was an Equal Rights Party candidate 160 years ago, 1838, 1834, whatever the year was exactly, Victoria Woodhull. And she is the 45th, McKinney is the 45th female to seek the presidency of the United States. I guess that includes, of course, Hillary Clinton. The McKinney-Clemente ticket is historic in naming two women to lead the nation, both president and vice presidential. So it's the first time for that. And McKinney said, "We make history today only," this is when she was nominated, "because we must. In 2008, after two stolen presidential elections, 8 years of George Bush, and at least 2 years of Democratic Party complicity, the racket is about war crimes, torture, crimes against the peace. The racket is about crimes against the Constitution, crimes against the American people, and crimes against the global community. The Green Party is no longer the alternative party. We are now the imperative party, the one that's essential," is what she means. Here's a little background on what's happening in Michigan Green Party. Okay, for example, for Senate, and of course he's going up against Carl Levin, the Democrat incumbent, Harley Mickelson, right here in Michigan. So if you look there, you'll see a Libertarian, a Green Party. Scotty Bowman is the, and we've talked to him before here on the show, is a Libertarian candidate for the Senate position, a Republican whose name I just don't remember, sorry, and of course Senator Levin, who was already in that position, Michigan Senator to Washington, D.C. Mickelson is a Vietnam vet, a union member, and an active Green Party member since 2002. He ran for Congress in 2002. He was opposed to starting a war in Iraq. He'd campaign, it says here, for fair trade in order to bring back jobs to the U.S. Sounds like Constitution Party, doesn't it? And would stress the need to provide more educational opportunities and health benefits for everyone. And nice picture of him here, too. So he's one of their major candidates. And finally, and we're going to go about 3 minutes to go here before we get on Highway 61 with blues music and Joanna Korchinska. Where's that other summary of what's happening in Michigan Green Party? This is very interesting, I saw, because in Michigan there is a candidate that they have chosen. They've nominated for a Congress from the western part of the state, a person who is currently in jail.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Reverend Edward Pinckney. I know there's a Pinckney, Michigan, but no relation here. But he's on the Green Party ballot for Congress, their nominating convention was held in Marshall, Michigan. He's one of 10 Green Party Michigan candidates so far who will run for Congress, and 17 in total nominated at the convention. They will all join the Green Party presidential ticket, of course, of McKinney and Clemente, and she was founder of the National Hip Hop Convention. Okay. Pinckney will run for the 6th district seat, now held by Fred Upton, who is part of the family that founded Whirlpool. Big business, of course. Pinckney has opposed the corporation's influence on local government and the plans of Whirlpool-led institutions to take Gene Clark Park away from the people of Benton Harbor for a golf... So a park, he's fighting for a park here, and the Whirlpool wants to take the park from the people of Benton Harbor for a golf course. Priced only for the wealthy, not like Dearborn's golf course out here, the Herndon golf course, where average person can actually play golf. Imagine an actual middle class or lower middle class person. Oh, there goes that phone again. Gee, why do they call when I'm on the air? I don't know. Let's see who that is. Don't know them, so I'll call them back. Okay. Kill that. I apologize to my listeners. Okay. Anyway, why is Pinckney, I just finished with this, why is he sitting in state prison in Jackson? He's awaiting appeal on a 3 to 10 year sentence for alleged mishandling of 4 absent voter ballots in a 2005 recall election. I didn't know he could get 3 to 10 years for this.
Wow.
And it's only 4 ballots that are in question of whether or not he did something here. The verdict came, first of all, after one mistrial in his case with a deadlocked jury, and despite an affidavit by one former prosecution witness saying the recall commissioner had offered him $10 to say that Pinckney had paid $5 for his vote. So in other words, he was one of the people who witnessed against him has now admitted he was bribed to say that Pinckney, you know, bribed him. To vote a certain way.
How can you go to jail for that long of a period of time?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad that, you know, because our elections should be fair and they should be well supervised. And anybody that fools around, I can't say the big F word on radio here, but anybody who fools around with the fairness of our elections should be sternly punished. But this is a vendetta out there because he's a community activist, like Barack Obama, who wants to preserve the park and is fighting Whirlpool, and somebody has put money in to get the development. I read about this Whirlpool development and heard about it on some of the newscasts, not Green Party, and they want condos and shopping. So there's a lot of business going on, and the developer is going to make a lot of profit. It's not just the golf course.
Are you saying he's a political prisoner?
Well, he is one guy who is fighting for the needs of the community, and all the business is against you, so they're trying to find any way to get him out of the way, I think. I mean, it seems that way to me, and I hate to be conspiratorial, but it's already admitted here that there was errors in the trial that's put him in prison. So I guess the Green Party is saying, you know, he's their kind of person fighting for the public, and that he should be definitely not being held in prison anymore anyway. And so that's the Green Party word. We're going to go to the opening theme for Joanne Korczynska and the new WHF Journal. We got to come to a close. But welcome back, Susan Morrell, and thank you for helping on today's show. And,
thank you, Jay.
Next week, Susan will be hosting the show.
Yes, and
I'll be
the economy will be better by
then. I'll be checking out home values in Austin, Texas, and I'll let you know. So thank you for now. This is WHFR Dearborn. We're making waves, WHFR.FM.
Hold on to your cash.